You're listening to the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect. I'm Mommy Imperfect, aka Rena, and joining me on my panel today to talk about some shut the front door stories of the week are Rummy and Amrit. We discuss role models, race and friendship, and social media. Have a listen.
So the reason I'm talking about role models is because the other day, Cardi B said on Twitter that she's had enough of being a role model, in inverted commas, because for the past 2 years, she's been watching what she's been saying and she's been feeling trapped because she can't be herself. She wants to just be herself again. And that was after a follower criticized her for sharing a very graphic image, a graphic illustration, let's say, on Twitter. So she got a bit of backlash about that, and that's how she responded, right? And then, like, and also because Kim Kardashian has revealed that she wants to become a criminal justice lawyer. And she apparently started a 4-year apprenticeship in San Francisco last summer, and she plans to take her bar exams in 2022. So, I mean, just this got me thinking about role models, right? Like Cardi B, she's saying, I don't want to be a role model, but is she still a role model? Is she a role model? Should she be held up as a role model? And is she actually a good one? I mean, I know that she's out there and saying, you know, I used to be a stripper, this is my past, I've drugged guys and robbed them and whatever. Is there something about her, though, which people can still look up to? Should they even be looking up to her? What do you guys think?
I think it's really hard to be a role model nowadays. It's like, you know, you have to be sort of the cleanest, best, shiniest version of yourself. And I'm surprised she's lasted 2 years. You know, she said, you know, she said 2 years ago, right, I'm going to clean up my act and I'm going to do it for you girls and I'm going to be better. It's a great intention. But then, you know, she's probably not been herself for the last 2 years. And that's not being really a good role model. I'm just trying to say it's really tough to be a role model now. Like, you know, when we were growing up, 90s, whatever, it would have been probably a lot easier. But I just think it's just really hard for people to be the shiniest version of yourself all the time. You can't but make a mistake.
Do they have to be though? What do you think?
Just get called out for it all the time.
Well, that's what I was going to say as well. What you've just touched upon, Rena. Like, I think it's okay. Like, you can find role models anywhere. Like, I follow so many different fashion people on Instagram because they inspire me because of what they do. I don't necessarily care what else they're doing in their life, but in terms of that one element, they can be my role model. I think it depends. And I think actually, like, yeah, a lot of that we have to take into consideration that a role model is expected to be this shiny, perfect, like, being. But at the same time, heart isn't some of the reason why they're a role model, because they're so, like, unapologetically themselves. Like, I love Stefflon Don because she is just completely like, this is me. If I want to get my thighs out, I'll get my thighs out. If I want to get my tits out, I'll get my tits out. Like, I love it.
Okay. And even
I think someone like Cardi B, she did really set herself up. She actually came out publicly and said, right, I am going to switch this up. I am now going to be better for you girls. And she kind of did just set herself up a little bit because, you know, it's almost like being the role model is the byproduct of your, you know, whatever you're doing. So whether you're a model or whether you're an actress or whether in this case, she's a really talented musician, they also then have to be really good at what they do and then also have this amazing public persona as well. And it's just not real. It's unsustainable.
I think personally, if there are celebrities out there who are oh so squeaky clean, they've done the right thing and, you know, always stayed on the right path, never like smoked, drink or anything in their lives, I would be like, really, what are you hiding?
Yeah, like, we're all human at the end of the day. I think a lot of the time we have to understand and touch on some of the points that you said, Ramin. Like, I think when you're putting yourself on social media or just in the public domain, like, you don't even have to be a star to do that these days. You could just have your own personal Instagram account, whether it's public or private or whatever. Someone still is going to see that. And you kind of have to, I think it's just a very big gray area that with social media, it's just made it even more kind of, we're just a bit unaware because you can't tell what's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
Look at this.
Carry on. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, just as you were talking there, that girl came to mind. Was she a Corrie star or an Emmerdale star that's been fired? because of some tweets that she made. I mean, they were quite rightly, you know, what she was saying was just disgusting. But then, you know, had, you know, she's, you know, could be a role model to many young women or whatever. And she's had to sort of, you know, she's been fired and she's come out and apologized. I mean, it's very difficult just going back to the, you know, to just be on that pedestal all the time. Yeah.
So who was on a pedestal for you guys when you were growing up? Was there any woman that you used to look at and think, oh, yeah, you know, I want to be like her or look like her or I want to do the things that she does? And it doesn't even have to be anyone famous, you know?
Do you know who mine was?
Who?
Because growing up, like let's face it, there wasn't many brown women anywhere, like in the limelight. I always kind of had this dream that I wanted to work in the media and stuff. Thankfully, I do now. But I always used to look at Connie Huck and be like, oh, that's so cool. Like, she's a brown girl and she's like... So people like that used to really kind of inspire me. But also, like, I mean, might sound like a cliche, might not, but Beyonce, like, growing up, she was like the poster girl for me. She'd be in all my like magazines and stuff, like the middle page that you keep and like Girl Talk and stuff. I used to like love that. And, you know, again, kind of, she's not brown, but she's still of color, and seeing that and like someone who's like clearly so beautiful and stuff like that is, you know, that was kind of like someone who I would used to look up to.
Yeah.
But then looking at that now, kind of some people can even take that a bit further and say like, oh, you know, was she pushing like beauty standards and XYZ and like ticking the boxes of people? Like, I think you would just have to interpret it forever which way is for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Ron?
I didn't have any, I don't know, no one really famous, actually. Quite boring, sorry. Probably older family girls that were older than me. I was kind of in the middle of the whole generation, so perhaps, you know, those guys just, you know, at uni working, I just felt, okay, yeah, that's really cool. But no one really famous. I was trying to rack my brains on who it was, but I was just well into boy bands and stuff like that. So in terms of women, I can't think of any. If I had to, I don't know, maybe like I was a massive X-Files fan, so maybe like Scully.
Okay. But
I would have pissed David Duchovny, like, you know, in like series, like episode 2 or something. So
just
because she was like so cool, and she was very, very intelligent. So yeah, I mean, at a push, probably her. But if I had to choose, but no, just probably more family members. And plus, it wasn't, nobody was really that in your face in the 90s, right, Rena? Remember, there was nobody being bombarded with.
Yeah, you had to seek it out. Like, now you're bombarded with things. We had to actually seek people out. So we just had to look at family members and be like, oh, I want to be like you. But that's a beautiful thing. Like, I don't want that to end. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want that to end on. I feel a bit like not saying that, you know, our daughters are gonna look at just people on Insta and whatever and forget about family members, but I would want them to still have those relationships with like aunties, older cousins and whatever, just to kind of think, you know, these are strong women and they inspire me. I think that's important to have that bond as well.
More important, I think, for, you know, especially for my daughters, because, you know, my daughter, she's 8, Mahi, she said to me the other day, oh, mummy, she goes, all you do is cook and clean, I don't want to be like you. And I'm like, oh my god. And I tried to sit her down going, I used to have a career, I'm a stay-at-home mom now, but I'm gonna go back to work, what I used to do. And she was just like, oh. And she didn't, you know, I've never really, they don't really know the working me, I suppose. And
that's,
you know,
really as interesting.
Yeah, I tried to like hide my, like, oh my god, I wanted to, like, oh my god, my daughter thinks I'm just like, you know, a bona fide chef and cook and taxi driver. But I was like, no, I am more than this. I was more than this, but just right now I'm, you know, this is what I'm doing, sort of thing. So they do, that, you know, the younger kids, they do pick up, they are looking at what people are doing and wondering whether they want to do that. Or in my daughter's case, not do that.
Like, what I was going to say, because just like you said, like, oh, my daughter says, oh, I just cook and clean. Me and my sister, she's sitting here listening to me. We say that about my mum all the time. But funnily enough, like, because she does it, I think I have this like inbuilt thing in me now that I know how to do all of that stuff, and I kind of adapt it to my lifestyle like I want to, and I will always be thankful for that. Like, a rule that I have, so I commute into London for work. I don't live there. It's my personal choice. I do not want to live there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I say is that I don't want to spend money on food or coffee or drink when I'm in London. It's ridiculously priced, and I don't know why I need to do that when I can just bring my own dinner, my own lunch, make my own coffee, have a water bottle, which I'll happily fill up. Like, I don't need to do those things. And that's, I think it comes from my mum, like, a lot of the time, like, you know, it was maybe an Indian thing as well, but like, oh, we can make it at home kind of thing. And I could spend £5 to £6 if I'm lucky on a meal, right? That's cheap, isn't it, in London?
Yeah.
But like, I don't need to do that every single day. Like, that mounts up. I mean,
I know.
I've got the disposable income to do so, but why do I need to? When that £5-6 can be like half of my weekly shop, and I can probably just make a whole batch of meals that I take to work with me. Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that gives me hope that I might be imparting some sort of wisdom.
Get her to listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Don't worry, I'll talk to her. I'll be like, excuse me, your mum has done a business degree, love. Like, I will say that to my own kids as well, but they said something similar to me as well. They said something like, oh yeah, so if I was mummy, I'll just do whatever mummy does, like cooking and cleaning, something like that. And then I literally was like, excuse me, I've actually got a degree. I was like, I have actually produced international radio programs.
Yeah,
you and they, I think they just switched off, but like, they were like,
but now you just you clean the cooker.
But like, you know, like,
it's shiny cooker.
Yeah, exactly. So going back to like Kim Kardashian, how she's now going to do a law degree, right? I was actually quite impressed with that. And so do you think now, like, you'd be okay with like your daughter's rum, and then any future daughters that you might have, Amrit, like looking up to her and being like, oh, look at her, she's beautiful, she's fashionable, and you know, she's studying to be a lawyer?
Yeah, why not? You can have it all. Like, you know, beauty and brains doesn't have to be one or the other. You can have everything that you want. I think you have to work for it. And okay, people say what they say about Kim, and you know, I'm keeping my personal opinions out of this, but she's proof that if you want to do something, go and do it. Recently I got the opportunity to meet Tina Singh, who is Lily Singh's sister. Mm-hmm. And we were chatting, and she was, you know, at the end of our kind of chat, we were speaking about, like, because she's a mummy YouTuber, she was saying, like, one piece of advice that I'd want people to know and remember is that before being a mum, you were someone, you are someone. Yes. Like, you are someone before being a mum. So I think the fact that Kim is a mum, she is a superstar, she is a model, she is whatever she is, but she's also, you know, she has a brain at the end of the day, and if she wants to use it for law, she can use it for law. Mm-hmm. Like, and that goes for anyone, whether you're a celebrity or not. Like, you're more than just what you might look on the outside.
Yeah And like, I kind of felt like I kind of admired the fact that she was like among a number of celebrities who kind of supported people who were in prison and, you know, had been wrongly convicted or whatever. She actually did speak out about these things before, which I kind of thought, okay, you're using your status for something good. I'm not the biggest fan of her, but these are things that I personally thought, okay, fine.
Yeah, no, I think it's really good. I think I did actually follow that case where, you know, she helped out that lady called Alice who was in she was, you know, in prison for like 2 decades. And so when I read the story, I felt that it was a natural follow on to that. So I just thought, OK, she obviously wants to do more. And for that, she's just, you know, gearing herself up. She's giving herself the skills to be able to not just bring the human element into these sorts of situations, but actually to, you know, contribute more. And to do that, she needs to know the legal system. And actually, who is then just going to say to her, well, you're just a celebrity Kim Kardashian? She's actually then got something to back up. I think that's pretty
cool. Good luck to her. I think it is.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move on to now talking about race and friendship. Okay. And so the reason I'm going to talk about this is because the other day I was at this parent and toddler group, And it was one that I don't normally go to. And like my area is very like diverse, but it was in kind of more towards Canary Wharf. And like there's most people there were white. And then there, I didn't know anybody. And then one of the two Asian girls there, I was kind of going to say hello, and she wouldn't even make eye contact. And I've actually seen this in areas that I've been to who are like, which are like posh areas where there's people that have taken white flight and gone to these areas. And then people have like, you get a few Indian, well-to-do Indians there as well. Like you're walking down the street. It's not like, oh, hello, how are you? I don't know, have you seen this Lily Singh and Daljeet Dosanjh little video on social media?
Yeah. Wait, I haven't seen
shake, it. Okay.
Where she says hello to them all.
She says that there's like, you know, white people in a row, and she says, hello, hello, shakes her hand. And then Diljit Dosanjh is there, and she's like, kidda paaji, theek hai, kede pinto hai ge, and all this, and just stands there talking to him in Punjabi.
Still shaking each other's hand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Still shaking hands, and then moved on to the next white guy. He's like, yes, hello, and then moves on, right? Really? It's quite funny. So I'm probably geared to that. I'm probably more likely to be like that, right? But should I? And is it kind of, do we need to do that anymore? Does there need to be this like silent acknowledgement of like, oh, there's another brown girl in the room, let's kind of like say hello and be friends? And or does it even matter? Like, should we just be colorblind? Like, who cares if there's Asians? Do they have to be your friend?
I think so actually a little bit of this happened to me today. So I was walking in the train station, and I was super late to get my train. I needed to get that train because I'd booked it, and I was like being super tight that I didn't want to pay another ticket, right? So I'm running through the train station, and I had like a really serious face on. I'm trying to get straight to the platform. But then I see this brown face walking towards me, and I recognise the face. And it was Neelam Gill, the supermodel.
Oh, so yeah.
I obviously got gassed that it's her, but then also I saw a brown face. So I just smiled at her. I was in a rush. I ain't got time to chat or grab a selfie. But I smiled at her, and she smiled back. And a part of me was like, was that like the brown nod thing that you get? You know, like,
yeah,
like the sing nod, the brown nod, when you see someone else. And I thought, actually, I did think about this. And I think it's perfectly okay and normal, and it's a human instinct, isn't it? When you see someone that is similar to you, whether that's race, whether that's body shape, size, whether they've got the same hair as you or just like the same colour top, you're going to look at them naturally and feel kind of affiliated to them. So I understand what you're saying, but also I don't think we need to kind of banish ourselves for it, because it's kind of a little bit natural.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's human nature. I think it is human nature to gravitate towards someone who is similar to you, I think. So even though there's nothing, like what you're saying, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it at all. I think it's human nature. And you always get a bit like you, Arena. If I had gone to a baby group, and I've been to many in my time, and there would have been another Indian person there, I think internally I would have gone, oh, okay, well, at least that person will talk to me. You know, you might find some like common interest or whatever, but not that I've ever sort of experienced that. But in my mind, I'd go, oh, well, you know, well, I'll definitely have something in common with her.
Yeah.
You know, you can always find sort of common ground, but there's no, it's not, I wouldn't have not talked to anybody else or, you know, or gone, you know, ran to her. It just maybe would have put me at ease, maybe slightly. It shouldn't do, but it does. I think it's human nature. But yeah, I was thinking about your question about, you know, should it bother us, or, you know, are my close friends the same sort of background as me? And
yeah,
and I think coming from from Shropshire, predominantly white area, was one of like maybe five Indian people in the whole school. I think now my closest friends, I think the majority are of similar background. You know, I would have thought it, you know, you would think that perhaps it's the other way around growing up in a, you know, predominantly white area, but no, it's the other way around. Most of them are Indian, not all of them. I have some very close white friends, some black friends, but majority are Indian. I don't know whether that's because we do have shared backgrounds and experiences, or
exactly the same thing.
Well, not you guys at uni.
Yeah, no, exactly the same thing happened to me. So actually, when I was one of those people that you're talking about, Rina, that wouldn't make eye contact. So I grew up in a very white area, Northampton. Yeah, and like now I'm very ashamed to say that I was ever like that, because some of my closest friends are all Indian. I have, again, people who aren't. But when I went to uni, I kind of coming from a white area, didn't want or didn't, I felt uncomfortable being around other brown people because I almost felt like that's not what I'm used to. So I kind of repelled them, and like it's really weird and silly to think that now. And I remember actually being in situations where I was like, thinking and being like, I'm not going to talk to that person. Like, I don't have anything in common with them. Already making this judgment because I had never had friends that were brown. But
then other people would have made a judgment of you. Like all the Indian people would have gone, well, she's stuck up, right? They would have, because it happened to me as well. Because it definitely happened to me at uni as well. That you just, you don't sort of, you know, you do shy away from it because you're not used to so much contact with Indian people. Yeah. So then you look like all the stuck up one that's not really mixing with all the Indians, you know?
I did get that. Like people used to think, oh, she's like the gaudy one, or she's a bit of a bounty. But then at the same time, I know that I'm actually very thisy, and like a perfect example is like Bhangra class. I used to love going, I love Bhangra. I'm a wicked dancer for anyone listening, you know, just just a little plug. I never like grew up professionally dancing or anything like that, and I wanted to go to like Bhangra Society, but when I'd go, I used to feel like I was an odd one out because people wouldn't, I just didn't gel with them as much. But then I made my own friendship groups, and kind of I do have a solid like group of friends who are happen to be brown. But one thing I was going to say is that actually having friends from other different races is very important.
Yes, 100%.
Because that's shaped my kind of knowledge of the world, of just learning about different cultures and forming my own opinions, and not just perhaps the typical brown thing to think, or just that kind of those ideas that happen to be shared in your community. You kind of branch out a bit and think wider. I think that's really important.
But do you feel like the closest friends who get you and get your life more, are they Indian? Honestly,
I think yes, but then at the same time it depends on the friendships that you make. So I have a handful of white friends who I don't see often. They live all different parts of the world, and even the country. But I know if I had a family situation going on or something within my culture that, you know, oh, there's a festival going on, and had to say to them, look, I can't come out tonight because I'm going to be with my friends or family, or something's happening. But they would understand. They would get it. And, you know, I think a lot of the time when I had friends from different cultures, when I started making these friendships, I would almost wear my culture on my sleeve. Like I would make it my point to explain that to them, tell them about traditions, tell them about stuff, so that when I did have to say that, oh, I'm going to this festival, or oh, I'm going to this wedding or function, they got it and they understood, and I never had to feel odd to explain that. So I think that's also like quite a big part of living in a different country, not like India or whatever, being British Asian, I guess, you know, embracing both cultures, and it's the way that you do it.
I also personally think it's kind of like a it's like a class thing as well, and an immigrant thing, because I feel like, I guess, like I'm from Coventry, and like a working class area, and you know, the daughter of immigrants, and I feel like other immigrants, I can kind of identify with them quite a lot. I don't know about you guys, but I feel like and not just like, I mean, there's white people as well. I have white people who are my friends as well, but I honestly feel that if you're from somebody else, your parents came here to kind of make a better life, and you have that kind of struggle going on, same as me, I just feel like we get each other a little bit more.
Yeah, there is shared connection, that shared heritage. You know, your parents have come over here in the 60s and 70s, and they are work. It's, you know, and you are sort of, you know, across these two cultures, and you've and that's big in itself, you know. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that I made it through, almost, you know. I have the best of both worlds, and you have that sort of shared experience with you know, other people in your generation. So yeah, it does foster, though, you know, you do feel like you have a connection, and you would have faced similar things, whether that's, you know, stuff at school, or, you know, being seen, you know, at the market with your mom, having just been to the Gurdwara with your suit on, and all that sort of stuff, you know, and just being, you know, sometimes a little bit embarrassed of who you were, but just Yeah, I mean, plenty of comedians have come up with the, you know, all those sorts of jokes about heritage and how we've sort of, you know, grown up. It's been documented, you know, Satnam Sengera in his books as well, you know, that kind of
another person I bumped into
between
today.
Two cultures. Yeah.
And that I agree, and actually the things that you were saying, Rina and Amen, about Robin, sorry, like the being like of an immigrant kind of thing. So I've got a story. Mine always, all these things always start with story.
Fine.
But so back at school, we had this exchange. I can't really call it a program because we never got to go to other countries, but a bunch of kids from different countries like Slovakia, Colombia, Milan, etc., came to our school, and there was a good bunch of them, around five kids in my sixth form. And I think it was the first day that they arrived, whatever, they're all plonked on a table together. And everyone else, obviously, in the year group had been to school together, so we all knew each other really well. There's these bunch of new kids, but none of the, I went to a majority white school, and none of the other kids were talking to these foreign exchange students. And I just thought, oh, that's, like, I always felt like a bit of an outsider anyway, being brown, like the only brown kid at school in my year group, etc. So I was like, I felt like a bit of sympathy towards these foreign exchange students, and I became their friend. And it was almost like, because I'd become their friend, then it became cool to want to talk to them and do things with them. So I was like kind of like their buddy, and I organized like trips and hung out with them, and they used to come to my house and like and stuff outside of school. And the other kids used to almost not feel jealous, but like be like, oh, Amrit's doing this cool thing with them, like, or can we do it too? And it was almost like, because I got them, I felt a little bit of their story within mine.
Yeah,
so I was their friend. And I think that's very true what you're saying in terms of you don't have to be brown to get the other person's, like another brown person's feelings or story or be affiliated with them. They can be an immigrant like any other. Exactly.
You're from somewhere else. You belong, but you don't really quite belong in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of a feeling. Yeah. Got a kind of kinship going on there. Yeah. So the last thing I want to talk about is social media. So the beauty company Lush has just quit social media, and I mean, I would say that the smell that comes from that shop does all the marketing and advertising that they need, right? Like, my sister used to work for them. She permanently smelt like that. She was a walking advert for Lush. She smelled so good all the time. So anyway, they basically said that they're tired of fighting with algorithms and they don't want to pay to appear in people's news feed. So they have decided to kind of open up a conversation in another way. And they're going back to the traditional way of getting in touch, like email, phone and post. But I think they've probably got something else up their sleeve as well. But for now, they've come off social media. And I personally love that because I have like a love-hate relationship with social media. Like, I feel like a bit like, I try and use it as a producer, not just a consumer, but, and I think I need to do more of it, but then sometimes I end up wasting my time on it. So I have this love-hate relationship. Now, Rami, I know that you told me the other day you're thinking of coming off Facebook.
Not only have I come off Facebook, I have come off Instagram as well.
This is like hearing Satan speak to me.
I know. Amrit, how old are you? Are you in your 20s?
Yeah, I am. I'm 27. Yeah,
so to anyone in their 20s, it's just like, who the hell are you?
Such get a off millennial. This.
Yeah. But you know what? I was addicted to my phone. My thumb's hurting. My hands are hurting from scrolling. I have put my, not too much cooker cleaning, but definitely just from scrolling on my phone. And I was sick of it. So for me, I'm not an influencer. I don't have a business. I use social media as a consumer. And as a consumer, I just had enough of being constantly bombarded with adverts and blah, blah, blah. And also just picking up my phone, even though I just checked Instagram literally 5 minutes ago. Oh, there might be something else. And I didn't realize I was doing it until...
Five minutes. So I do it every 10 seconds.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, and then it was, you know, and there would always be something new within 10 seconds, within 5 minutes. There's another story and I just felt like, you know, you're compelled to look at it. Even if it's people who you have chosen to follow, it's still sort of this crutch, man. And I actually, you know what, it's been 2 days and... I love it. I'm loving it. I'm going to you know, nip back in. I haven't, like, I've just deactivated my account, so whenever I want to, I can sort of dip in again, but that sort of app being there on my home screen, that just constant need to just press it and check what's going on, I feel really, really free. You know, Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, when he literally gets unplugged and all those things come off.
is that you?
And he comes out of that slime. That's me. That's me. Like, taking all the slime off. And I just, it feels good. I mean, I've had a few messages of people saying, oh, have you seen this sale that this person's doing? And she's selling all her sample sale. And I was just like, oh, I'll check it out. And I'm like, oh, no, I can't check it out, because I'm not on Instagram anymore. But I just went in online. Actually, I went onto my PC, found that particular person having this sample sale of Indian outfits, and just had a look at it online and thought, oh, okay, that, you know, it's good. I've had a look at it now, and then I can walk away from my PC. I think I'm going to try and do that a bit more. So I just feel, I mean, yes, I will go back to it. It's not going to be something that I'm just going to, you know, shun, because it's the future, blah, blah, blah. We all know it. But I just felt that it was just becoming an addiction. Nothing wrong with social media, but it's just me always having to just, you know, just be on it all the time. And I don't like my kids seeing it, because I'm on my phone all the time.
Yep.
And WhatsApp is enough. WhatsApp groups are enough, you know? Yeah. So yay, go me.
That's really good. It's really refreshing as well.
I've
realized how, just as you're saying, addicted to social media I am. But I was in a panel chat the other weekend at the Asian Woman Festival, talking about exactly this topic. And at the end, I was asked, we were all asked actually, like, if you could change your social media habits, what would you do, or what are you more conscious of? And do you know what I said? Nothing. Because I'm really happy the way I use social media. Like, I understand I do it a lot, but I'm also very aware. So when I go to bed at night, I know that I'm on my phone, and I just literally check myself, and I'm like, get off your phone. I like to listen to prayers before I go to bed, or a meditation video or whatever, a breathing app. I put that on instead, remind myself to put that on and not scroll on Instagram. That's not going to soothe me to sleep, is it? Like, it's gonna just make me anxious or whatever. So I'm very aware of how I am and what I do. Like, I'll wake up in the morning and waste 20 minutes in bed because I'm scrolling, whereas actually I could really get a nice 20-minute snooze. I don't need to be on my phone, like, you know. And just simple things like that, and also, like, when I'm walking around and stuff, take in the environment that I'm walking in, don't just stare at a phone. And I think what I try and do is realistically weigh up what it is I'm doing on social media, whether I'm just scrolling, like, for pleasure, or if I'm posting something, because, like you said, you're not an influencer, woman, but I use social media as a tool for kind of either modeling work that I'm doing, if I'm influencing, or posting a video or some content or whatever. So I have to kind of, for me, I have to split my use. I kind of have to look at when I'm working as such, or when I want that time to just look at social media for myself. So it gets a bit awkward, actually, and I have to kind of look at when I want to split that up. Like, I kind of get, this is awful, my sister's gonna, like, look at me really bad now, but I've said this before in the public and I don't mind, but, like, toilet time on my phone, that's when I can scroll.
Loads of people do it.
I'm not the only one.
For a week and scroll, because I just actually want to, like, sit down away from everybody else in this house and just, like, take, like, you know, a little bit longer to just sit there in silence. Yeah. And I mean, it's quite bad, really.
I mean, well, I know, we have to find our little safe places.
I'm basically saying I'm hiding in the toilet, really, aren't I?
Yeah. No, but, you know, I picked up a book, I read a quarter of my new book. It was, and I wouldn't have done that. Like, I took a bath last night and I did the candles and I.
Oh, so nice.
What I would have been doing is sitting on the sofa while sat, watch the 10 o'clock news, and I would have been on Instagram, or I would have been on Facebook.
I'm glad you didn't say you would have took your phone to the bathroom, in the bath. I know people that have done that.
And so with in a nice bath, you do not want your phone, right? You want a book. But I've done that. I have done that. I have taken a book in and taken my phone in, but spent 45 minutes on my phone and 5 minutes reading my book. So yeah, I do find I'm not picking up my phone anymore, and I just look at it now and go, well, there's nothing on there, you know, so I'll just leave it where it is and go and do something else. Yeah,
I've said that to myself as well. Like I need to be using social media more as a tool as well. Like I do already, but I think I need to do a bit more of that. But sometimes I just get so bored of it and I'm like, I'm so tired of this. I just want to like come away from all this. And I think I need to probably compartmentalize my time a little bit more to say, okay, you're going to go on this, bang this out, you know, that's it. Check later or whatever, but then come away from it. And I mean, I've said to myself as well that instead of like mindlessly scrolling, like that's a waste of time for me to just, I mean, it's good to know what's out there, right? But I just think mindlessly scrolling is a waste of time. So like you, I've started reading books again, Rums. Like I'm reading Michelle Obama's book. And so,
yeah,
good one. You know, I started it ages ago and then stopped. And now like I'm really into it. It's so good. And I'm just thinking like, just go back to old school a little bit. Be in the moment. Yeah. And same as you, I don't want my kids to see me all the time on phone, and I'm not. And I say to them all the time, like things like tablets, phones and all this, you be the one that controls them. Don't let them control you. That's what I'm saying to my kids. So obviously I need to then be an example of that, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And there will be a time, you know, my Jede is going to be 12 this month, and he has a phone, and that's what he sees me doing all the time. I'm on my phone all the time. Not anymore, but I was. And so they're going to do what's that saying? They do what you do, not what you say, something like that. So yeah, I mean, they're just waiting for that time. And, you know, where in a couple of years, he won't even be like, you know, they'll just be on their phones, just like we were. And you can't really blame them.
No, I know. Also, like, I'm not quite comfortable with kind of these algorithms. I mean, like the fact that Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, they probably know more about us than we know about ourselves, really. Because you might think, oh, yeah, I actually really like intellectual quotes from like really intelligent women. And then they're like, no, you're not. You're going to look at pictures of like Kim Kardashian's bum and people twerking because that's what you really like. Here, have some more of it. Do you get what I'm saying? It's kind of, this is what comes up. Or like some people that, you know, you've looked at something which you don't even like, clicked on it, and now they're like, oh, well, we'll show you more of this because you clicked on it.
That happens to me all the time. So I'm a little bit obsessed. Or actually, not even obsessed. Okay, I am. But here's my story. Another story. I find it really therapeutic to watch makeup videos.
Mm-hmm. Like, you do them as well, don't you?
I do makeup and things like that myself as well. But, that's content I like to create. But however, just to kind of sit down and just unwind or just relax for just like a quick, I say screen break, but like screen break for my work computer, just to get away from the stress of what I'm doing, just to kind of time out a little bit. I really like to look at a makeup video. I find there's something beautiful about looking at a bare face to then be painted in some art. People might criticize me for saying this, but however, that's how I feel. And I really, really like watching them, but I don't need my feed to be full of them because I like watching other things too. I like quotes. I like whatever. I like, you know, I use my social media as like a discovery tool as well. But actually, because I might have liked a couple of videos before, and now I go to my explore page and it's just eyebrows. It's just eyeshadow. Like, I don't need to see 700 cut creases. Thank you.
Get flights to Amsterdam that you might have searched up last weekend or anything. Or jumpsuits, I think I researched the other day because I'd gone onto this website and then all of a sudden this particular company, Lucy and Yak, by the way, they do really, really nice jumpsuits. But then it started appearing, this one website, because I happened to look at it last week for 5 minutes, keeps appearing. And it's just annoying. You know, you're being sucked in, you know, you're being targeted. It's just a bit icky, really.
Mm.
And sometimes I think that I have maybe spoken about something or maybe thought it and it's on there, you know, and I'm like, hang on, did I Google this or did I just think this? And it's now coming up in my feed. Like, I'm sure I didn't have this conversation with anybody, and now there it is, whatever I was thinking about. And yeah, you all get a bit big brother. I'm reading George Orwell's 1984, so I'm like proper cynical about everything at the moment. Everyone's listening.
You've been listening to the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect. Hope you like what you heard. If you do, please subscribe. Until next time, take care.